The last barrier for women in the military has been removed. Defense Secretary Ash Carter said women can serve in any of the armed services pretty soon and in any of the combat responsibilities. The move raises a lot of questions. How will it affect readiness, combat effectiveness, logistics? For some possible scenarios, we turn to retired Army Lieutenant General David Barno, now a scholar in residence at American University. Dave, great to have you back.
Great to be back, Tom.
Is this political correctness run wild? Is it great military strategy? Something in between? What's going on here?
I think it moves towards the category of an important decision that's long overdue. This is clearly going to make the U.S. military stronger. It's going to provide access to the entire population, men and women alike, for every job in the military. And really, I think, advance the capabilities of the U.S. military to continue to be the best in the world here for the next half of this century and beyond.
Well, I mean, the military has had access to that distaff side or the, you know, that other side of the talent pool that's not male for a long time. Is actual frontline combat necessary for all of that talent to be realized?
Well, it's not actually true that they've had access to it. I've served most of my career in Ranger battalions and infantry and paratroop units. None of those units had any women in them whatsoever, and that remains true up until today. So the fact is you're going to actually change the composition and the ability of those units to bring in extremely talented, women into these organizations that have been only occupied by men. The fact that the Army, for example, had three women graduate from Ranger School here in the last several months really reinforces the point that, you know, women can do the very, very toughest jobs out there and can serve in these units. A very important decision.
Now, Ranger School is well known to not be summer camp or any kind of a picnic. It's probably the hardest thing a human being can do. Are the standards, do you feel, going to stay the same for men and women will have to meet those?
Absolutely. And I think that's one of the high points that Secretary Carter made on Thursday when he made this announcement, that none of the standards are going to change for any of the entrance requirements for special operations, for infantry units, for fire support specialists. All these new specialties and all these new units that are open, women will have to meet the exact same standards that men do today. And that was certainly true in Ranger School. I was there for that Ranger School graduation, talked at length to the cadre who had overseen the program, and there was nothing in those standards that changed. And the women, you know, performed remarkably well under really tough conditions.
What do they like, the women that succeed in doing something like this?
I think they're driven. I think they're focused. I think many of them have waited for a long time to be able to aspire to serve in these units and in these jobs. And I think that, you know, there won't be a huge, you know, tidal wave of women that are seeking to become infantry riflemen or, you know, special operators, but there'll be some incredibly talented women that heretofore couldn't actually compete to do that. And I think that's going to enhance the readiness and the capability of all those forces.
Now, I guess in the imagination of most people that have not been there, there's a lot of physical strength required for Ranger operations or any kind of combat operation. I mean, given modern warfare, how much is physical strength a factor? How much is just the ability to aim well and make sure that electronic systems that support firepower are set up properly? I mean, what's it really like physically?
Physical strength still matters. It's extremely important. There cannot be anybody in these units that can't meet the physical standards, and they are extraordinarily tough. And the Ranger Regiment having to foot march with a 35 or 45-pound rucksack at a minimum for 12 miles and do that in 3 hours, to have to do, you know, sizable numbers of push-ups, be able to, you know, survive in a water landing, things of this nature. Those physical requirements are crucial. The very important part about this decision on Thursday is that none of those will change, that all those entry requirements for each of these jobs and for all these units, some of the unit standards are very demanding as well, aren't going to be altered at all to bring women aboard.
Are there women serving in these types of capacities at any other militaries in the world, and do we know what the experience they've had is?
There are. A number of our NATO allies have got women serving across all their forces. I'm somewhat reluctant to compare the U.S. military to some of these other militaries. I think, you know, some of the things we do, our standards are unique, but we have certainly gone out and studied what a number of our allies have done around the world, and their efforts have been successful, much like we saw with the integration of gays into the military during Don't Ask, Don't Tell. It was much ado about nothing at the end of the day, that there was, you know, very smooth integration of that. We observed that in our allies ahead of time and found the same thing there. And I think there's a lot of echoes in this decision, and I suspect what the results will be when women begin to serve in these units here in the not-too-distant future.
We're speaking with Army Lieutenant General retired David Barno, now a scholar in residence at American University. So what will the armed services need to do now? I mean, Ash Carter gave them a 30-day deadline to enact this type of thing. As you say, there won't be thousands of women ready in 30 days. But what do the military services have to do to begin accepting women into these combat roles and preparing?
I think they have to publicize what the standards are for each of the different specialties and units that women will now have to compete to, so that the women that want to do that can begin to prepare themselves. That's already happened with the Army's Ranger School, for example. I know there's West Point cadets up there that are not yet graduated from West Point that are preparing themselves to go to Ranger School 1, 2, or 3 years down the road. And so publishing the standards will be very important. The other thing the services have to do is identify how are they going to bring women in. If they have, you know, 5 women that want to compete, only one actually gets through the pipeline, how are they going to actually assign them? What units are going to get the women first? How are they going to make sure that there's a, you know, reasonable mass of women so that it's not one woman in a unit of 800 men? That's probably not a particularly good idea. And so they're going to have to think through the logistics and the mechanics of this a bit and then report that back to Secretary Carter here in the next month.
Now, a lot of people think about facilities, you know, men restrooms and that kind of thing on the forward operating situations where combat takes place. Anything there that's really required? I mean, there are women in support roles now and have been for a long time. So is that really a non-issue?
Yeah, I think that story is over. I think the fight in Afghanistan and Iraq, I spent, you know, 19 months in Afghanistan, you know, in the earlier days there. That has been worked out, and that's now a norm across force. We've had women at the most remote operating bases in Afghanistan, in female engagement teams in the case of the Marines, cultural support teams in the case of the Army, out there operating with infantry platoons and in very tough environments. So I think women and men have figured that out. We're beyond the niceties of having, you know, nicely, cleanly marked restrooms and facilities for men and women out there in the battlefield. That's not how it works out in combat. And I think, you know, this generation in particular has gotten very comfortable with that being the norm out there.
And so what else do you think are the challenges? I mean, the Marine Corps has been reluctant in all of these endeavors relative to the other uniform services. You think they'll be able to come along pretty closely, too?
The Marines have phenomenally effective leadership, and they will salute and move out on this. General Dunford, who is the commandant of the Marines at the time when the Marines requested an exception policy, now is the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. As he noted in a statement yesterday, his job is now to lead the effective implementation of this policy now that the decision has been made. And I'm 100% confident the Marines will do that with vigor as they do everything. And so I don't think that's at all worrisome. I do have a little bit of concern that their percentages of women are substantially less than in many of the services. And so, again, that critical mass of how you look at women, how well women are integrated, sometimes is problematic when the numbers of women are down in the 10% or less range. And that's pretty much where the Marines are falling down. Their officer corps, I think, is only, you know, 5 or 6% women. That's about half or less as much as some of the other services. So I think they may have to look at recruiting more women. I know the Secretary of Navy, Secretary Mabus, has challenged them to do that.
Now, the different services have different success rates from year to year in recruiting and meeting their recruitment goals. Do you think that the availability of every possible military responsibility to women will help with the recruitment end of things?
I think it can only help. It's going to allow you to access part of the population you couldn't go out and reach to recruit for your infantry battalions and your tank regiments before. So I think this will open the door to recruiters. And I think over time, as we've seen this in sports as well, over time, more women will see themselves as interested in fields that they didn't even consider at one point. So I think over the next, this is not a, you know, this year problem. This is a 10-year, 15-year, 20-year you know, evolution we're going to see as women begin to envision themselves having some of these roles that before weren't even part of their horizon.
Retired Army Lieutenant General Dave Barno is a scholar in residence at American University. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thanks, Tom.
Share this interview with colleagues. Go to federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive and click Share with Friends.